the tenacity and the strength that they have, how they have to warrior up and fight for what they believe needs to happen.
Today, more than 100 tribes are working to implement the Amber Alert system. Legislation signed into law in 2018, named in memory of Ashlyn, provides federal funding and resources to help tribes with implementation. Jim Walters is with the Amber Alert training program and works with tribes to bridge gaps. He says there are many challenges facing Native nations, but says many tribal communities have found a way to make the alert system work.
As it seems like a huge task, it seems like it's daunting. We infrastructure, communications, staffing, and so forth. But the reality is all of those can be overcome. Communities across this country have done it. And what it takes is that flag bearer, right? Who's the person in that community that's going to stand up and make it happen?
Since Ashlyn's death, the Navajo Nation has implemented an Amber Alert program, which spans New Mexico, Arizona, and Utah. Representatives from more than 22 tribes from 34 states attended the symposium. The Little River Band of Ottawa Indians in Michigan has been awarded a $700,000 grant to help build a new food distribution center. The program will increase the number of people served. Leaders told 9 and 10 News the program has seen a demand in recent years. The new center is expected to be finished by August 2020. The funding is from the Department of Housing and Urban Development to stimulate community development. The Fallon Paiute Shoshone tribe in Nevada has been awarded more than $1 million to improve water treatment and fix aging infrastructure. The USDA grant to modernize the treatment facility is intended to help protect the environment and the health of tribal residents. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
In Paris, France, scientists have tested 162 children for lead after hundreds of tons of lead from the Notre Dame Cathedral's roof melted in a fire. Health officials say a young boy needed medical attention because tests showed he was at a high risk for lead poisoning. Or according to health officials, the results, quote, show on the one hand the need to keep cleaning to limit the risk of exposure to the children to lead, and on the other hand, the importance of extending blood tests. The levels of lead are high in some spots inside the cathedral and in the soil of the parks and streets. There are no dangerous levels in other streets where tourists visit souvenir shops and restaurants have reopened. Authorities are recommending blood tests for children younger than 7 and pregnant women who live near Notre Dame.
Citing a high level of gun violence in the United States following the El Paso and Dayton murders, Uruguay and Venezuela have joined a growing list of countries that have issued travel warnings to their citizens planning to visit the U.S. Venezuela named several U.S. cities, including Oakland, Detroit, and Baltimore, saying they should be avoided because of their high rates of violence. Venezuela has one of the highest murder rates in the world. In January, the U.S. State Department warned our citizens against traveling to Venezuela, and last week raised the caution level for Uruguay due to increased crime. The Japanese consulate in Detroit calls the U.S. a gun society Sunday and told its travelers to be aware of the potential for gunfire incidents everywhere in the United States.
The Portland Business Alliance has announced 3 special honorees for women in leadership. Nancy Stuber, president of Oregon Museum of Science and Industry, the nonprofit Adelante Mujeres, and the healthcare company Cambia Health Solutions. They'll be recognized at an annual celebration called A Place with No Ceiling on Thursday, September 26th at the Oregon Historical Society. The event celebrates, connects, and inspires women in the business community by honoring a female executive and groups that support, mentor, and foster the advancement of women. The event committee chair, Jessica Getman, says, quote, from first-year professionals to the boardroom, we are incredibly proud of those who help women succeed in the workplace and foster a vision of place with no ceiling. A committee chose OMSI President Nancy Stuber for developing exhibits for girls to engage with STEM topics, which are science, technology, engineering, art, and mathematics. The award also goes to Adelante Mujeres for its dedication to the education and empowerment of Latina women and their families. Cambina Health Solutions was selected because it has a strong presence of women in leadership positions, programs to advance its female employees, and for 3 years in a row, it has received a perfect score on the Corporate Equity Index.
K
KBOO Evening News for this Wednesday, August the 7th, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. We welcome it. In fact, call us with your breaking news stories and tips. Here's the number, 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast, special thanks to Lily Cruz, Dan Raphael, Amara Moore, Melinda Wolger, and Kenzie Beard. Our producer is myself, Annette Newell, and our engineer is Danielle Parks. A podcast of this newscast is available for you on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. KBOO News In-Depth is coming up next. I'm Annette Newell. Thanks for joining us.
In January of 2017, after decades of study and legal debate, the EPA ordered a $1.5 billion cleanup of the Willamette River Superfund site. It's a 2,200-acre stretch of the Portland Harbor that's deemed toxic for more than a century of industrial activity. The plan includes dredging and capping toxic sediment from the stretch of the river and disposing of it off-site. Throughout the year, environmental groups have been warning against weakening the Willamette River Superfund site cleanup plan. Joining us now on the KBOO News In-Depth is Donovan Smith, who's with the Portland Harbor Community Coalition, and also Matt Randall, a musician engaged in one of the projects that the Portland Harbor Community Coalition is putting on. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Yep.
Would you like to introduce yourself, explain a little bit about the Portland Harbor Community Coalition and how it ties into the Willamette Superfund site?
Yeah, for sure. So Portland Harbor Community Coalition, we've been around for I think like 7 years now, working with most impacted communities on the Willamette River cleanup. I think environmentalism, especially in Portland, a lot of times is very white, you know, and so PHCC recognizing that the Willamette River cleanup is one of the biggest projects that's going to be happening over the next few decades. We're trying to make sure that those communities that a lot of times are not being centered in a lot of these conversations are actually centered in this one.
And what are some of those impacted communities that you help represent?
Yeah, so you need a lot of breath in your lungs to get them all off, but it's Native Americans, Black folks, immigrants, refugees, houseless people, and then people who are directly in the area. So from Broadway down to Salvies, you got a lot of different communities living down there, or communities that have lived there too.
You were talking about earlier this year about you were concerned that they were going to change, make some change to the Superfund site plan and weaken it, and basically weaken what they were going to be doing in terms of that big $1 billion cleanup.
Right.
Tell us about where that stands now.
Yeah, so like Leslie said, it got deemed a Superfund back in 2000, which I don't know if everybody knows what even that term is, but just in short, under the EPA, the Superfund is a program of the Environmental Protection Agency, which was supposed to have a bunch of money, you know, hence Superfund, to clean up a bunch of the toxic sites all throughout the country. And a lot of those Superfunds have been in like Black and brown communities because we a lot of times we've been dumping zones for some of the worst of the worst. And so long story short, the Willamette River has been one of those dumping zones for a while, and it took a lot of work for people to even get that designation. But right before Trump came into office, Obama's administration, before he was about to exit, they got the final cleanup plan out under his administration, and then we got the guy we have right now. And so
how much did you was originally earmarked for that plan?
Yeah, the original kind of estimations that was being put out was like about $700 million, somewhere in that ballpark, for 8% of the worst toxins in the river, which is like PCBs, DDTs, and stuff like that, which is like in short, you're talking about cancers and things of that nature. So with that, groups like ourselves, Portland Harbor Community Coalition, and like the CAG and some other advocates, we were working to like get the word out during public comment to say, basically, we need a higher cleanup. Like, if you're saying 8% of the worst toxins, that means 97% of the worst toxins, or 92. I can do math.
Yeah.
I can do math. I went to private school.
But that's a lot. That's a lot of percentage that would be left over if they're only willing to cover 8%. And 8% would still take what you're saying, something around in the hundreds of millions of dollars that was originally earmarked.
Just for that.
And so where is it at now? How has that changed?
So we actually got the most comments for a Superfund site on the whole in this whole region. And so that was more than 5,000 comments that we garnered for that. And that pushed the cleanup a little bit higher. So it's like 13% now. And so that means it's going to be a little bit more safe for people to go out there and, you know, recreate, catch fish in particular.
So that 13%, do they just include a larger amount of the stretch to clean? Or is it certain elements of the stretch? Are they caring about the more fish or more plants? How do they determine that they're going to take care of more?
Yeah, it's for the same stretch of the river, so from Broadway to Solvies again. But what it means is more will be cleaned up, more will be dredged out, more will be capped. And so it's not something where we're just claiming like total victory. The river is still going to be pretty sick, you know, at the end of the day, but it will be safer for people. And we know, like, I'm 27 right now, Matt, you're like
31.
So, like, you know, the people coming up behind us, they're going to have to do, you know, more work, you know, once this cleanup is done. But it's just one of those situations where we still have to say at least we got more, and people can push for more from our government. So to answer your question, one of the biggest threats that we got was back in, I think it was late November, that the EPA was saying one of the toxins in the river, which is benzoylpyrene, which is a subset of something called PAH. And I hope I don't bore people too much when I'm breaking down all these sciences and whatnot, but essentially what it is, PAH, benzoylpyrene, is another thing that can cause, you know, like asthma, kidney disease, liver disease, things of that nature. So like where you can find like a lot of PAHs, for example, is like when you burn wood. A lot of people don't know this. Like you have a campfire, you're letting off a lot of PAHs and it's not great for you. But PAHs are also at the bottom of the river. And so what the EPA approached the community late last year and said is, okay, we've been doing this PAH study for some years now, and our newest science says it's 7 times less toxic than we originally thought. And so that's something where we kind of had a lot of questions. Not kind of, we had a lot of questions. And also we were given originally a 30-day public comment period to figure out if we were okay with them, you know, lessening the cleanup based on these sciences that they said were the newest and latest. And, you know, some of the questions for us that, you know, set off red flags is, it also came with like a $35 million lessening of responsibility for Northwest Natural and the Port of Portland in particular. So in terms of the cleanup that we got out here on the Willamette, you got a lot of different players, government agency, quasi-governmental, and you also have
community groups, advocates like yourselves.
Right, but you also have like private businesses and things like that, small, big Toyotas, and you got Schnitzer Steels, and you got like companies that don't even exist anymore, and it's like more than 150 of them. So, but the port and Northwest Natural, they're two of the largest ones. So the way we kind of looked at it, like, let's say the science is even true. Let's say it's completely true and factual, which we still don't know because we're not scientists. We're just like people who care, you know, and we had this thing presented to us.
But supposing it is.
Yeah, let's take that for what it is and still say $35 million less for cleanup that we pushed to get higher. For two of the biggest polluters in this situation, that's not something we're pushing for. But also, like, we had some lawyers who are advocating called Earth Justice, and they did some of their own digging, and they came out against it, you know. And we put a letter into the EPA, Portland PHCC did, and just with that letter alone, we had like 100 signatories on our letter, individuals and, you know,
business persons and things of that nature.
And we had a wide range of people. It was people who were just like people who cared in the neighborhood. It was business people. It was advocates, social justice advocates. So it was one of those things where, you know, we again pulled with some of our partners and everything. We pulled in like 1,000+ comments for that. And they did extend the comment period for 60 days. So they're going
to
be.
You've got a few small wins by being able to get that opportunity to speak out, to address these issues with a lot more businesses and individuals drawing them into the conversation.
Yeah, and when I'm saying businesses, I don't want to confuse it too much for people. Like, we are still, in the grand scheme of things, we're talking about like smaller businesses.
The mom things, pops and the little local owners.
With that being said, you know, what will determine, excuse me, a lot of if EPA goes this way EPA this way or that way is going to be when they bring it officially to the governor. And she kind of will have to make she'll have to give her feedback on it. So people can still give feedback to the governor and, in fact, the head of Department of Environmental Quality, too. I want to say his name is Richard Whitman. And so when you go to Earth Justice's website, you can actually still type in like Portland Harbor, and you can fill out a letter. There's a template already there where you can talk to them about what you would like to see. So even though that public comment period through the EPA is done, you can still go ahead and advocate for what you want to advocate for. Hopefully
definitely
it's for
to help maintain
a cleaner river.
The funding to clean these rivers up. So you've already mentioned a few of these moves that you've done to help mm-hmm. create funding and outreach. What else do you have as goals with the Portland Harbor Community Coalition?
Yeah, I mean, the kind of centerpiece to our work at this point is like a community benefits agreement in some form or fashion. So it sounds like what it is is making sure that the community benefits at a higher level, though, than what's mandated by the cleanup. Because there's a federal mandate for the river to clean up, get clean. So it's going to happen. But what we're saying is, all right, the communities that we represent, we'd like to see some participation at a higher level. So
sounds like you want to set a higher standard.
Right. So with legal teeth behind it, too. It's not just like, you know, signing a piece of scratch paper and like, all right, we're going to, you know, do X, Y, Z. But like, there's jobs that come out of this, right? There, if you got a bunch of people that are going to be out there like on the river doing cleaning this stuff up, hauling stuff off, those are jobs, you know. So part of that is like, can we get, you know, some of the native community that's been hurt by the
pollution
in the river,
so that way some of the impacted
people
can, for example,
what the CBA could also entail is you have a lot of houseless people out there on the river right now. Okay, well, if you got a lot of people out there, you know, a lot of times houses people get the blame for the pollution of the river. And it's like, if we're talking about totality, we're talking about rocks and boulders, you know. And so, like, how can you help the houses community become stewards of the river? One, you know, as this cleanup is happening, but also like, you know, have some like human protocol behind what they're doing. If there's going to be heavy machinery and whatnot, and people out there on the river who don't necessarily know everybody who's out there.
So
you know,
if you're looking for a sensitivity to how the cleanup occurs and how that cleanup is going to affect people while it's happening.
Yeah, and then the communities who have been in the area too. How can they secure some of this billion-dollar project? And, you know, you're talking about Black communities too. Like, you got people who live right there on the river, adjacent to the river. Mm-hmm. I think last time you and I talked, maybe I had mentioned that, like, I just found out I have family members that live just off of Mississippi who actually were going out there to the Portland Harbor all the time and like eating the catfish out there and some of the other stuff.
With everything that you've mentioned being in the river, these PAHs, right. PCBs, that sounds rather toxic if people are eating the fish.
Right. So like there's harm that's not even necessarily being accounted for that's happened to different communities, which when you talk about especially like Black and brown communities, you can't just settle on just talking about the river in and of itself. The type of health impacts that we deal with is not just like based in one thing. It's not just because you ate the fish. It's because you're going to a job that is heavy labor that's impacting your body, and then you're stressed out because of, you know, the way that society is, and then you're stressed out because of XYZ, and then you might also happen to live into a home that's not
environmentally sound.
Environmentally sound.
Right.
You already knew what I was going to say. Yeah. So
there's a lot of factors that compound.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So when we're talking about most impacted communities, that's what we're talking about. It's not just as simple as talking about the fish. That's one aspect.
You guys are looking to get direct engagement with the more ancillary and, you know, secondary aspects rather than the just direct river cleanup.
Right.
Right.
Right. And that's not mandated federally.
You know, let's talk about the personal impact of how this affects real people who live along the river or depend on the river. You know, I know your group, PHCC, has been collecting some stories from people who were from Black, Native American, immigrant, refugee, and houseless communities. What has their response been like? Can you give us an idea of what they're saying?
Yeah, I mean, it looks different for everybody. Like, there's some kind of broad brushstrokes in terms of the communities that are impacting and how people kind of come into this work. But, you know, you have people like Miss Wilma, who's in our coalition. And Miss Wilma, you know, she grew up in North Portland. She remembers seeing, she's 81 or 82. I hope she don't whoop me for telling her age on air and whatnot. But yeah, Miss Wilma, she grew up near the river, caught fish in the river all the time, and her dad worked in shipyards out there on the river. She's pretty sure that is what contributed to his death, you know, just working out there and being exposed to what he's being exposed to out that way as well. And she feels very, very deeply about the river, and she saw kind of this transformation that was happening with it. She remembers seeing like stuff going into the river too, and she's still very active with the coalition just because she wants to like see a change for her grandkids, like, and hoping that they have like a different relationship with it. So you got situations like that. I mean, and Miss Wilma will also be performing at an event that we're going to talk about here, but like, you also have people like Art McConville, who just cares about water, and he's, you know, he's worked with our coalition. He's an elder as well. He's worked with our coalition for a long time now, and when we did the last water ceremony out there at Cathedral Park with him, he was like, this is going to be like I don't want to misquote him, but something to the effect of like one of the pinnacles of all the work that I've done, you know. So like, you know, this river, it means a lot to different people. And I think just that when you think about it on kind of a holistic level, it's kind of messed up. Like, even for me, like, I grew up here, and when I was crossing the river to go to school every day, like, I didn't have a second thought about it. I didn't ever get in the Willamette because I just thought it was gross, and I also can't swim. But we don't talk about that.
I remember being told by many people about how it was a dirty river, and it took a while for me to kind of understand what they were talking about.
Yeah.
Why people said never go swim down there. Right. Definitely don't eat the fish. So I got a lot of warnings from the.
They're saying it's swimmable now.
Yeah. They say it is now because they there are some events that do get put on and around near the river. Some of them, there's like floats, you know, that there's always stuff going down in McCall waterfront. But you gentlemen are participating in a river awareness event, but also with some music and fun to engage the community up in St. John's. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, so it's called Illamette, and we're going to be doing that August 24th from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. down there at Cathedral Park. It's free. And so it's going to be a hip-hop festival. And, you know, if you didn't get it, it's kind of a play on Illmatic, which is like one of the best hip-hop albums of all time, but also like the river being sick, but also like it's just going to be a
Willamette, yeah.
Yeah, and it's going to be a dope festival too.
And so it's called the Illamette Hip-Hop Festival. Yeah,
that's great.
And so PHCC and Get Hooked Foundation, who are also our partners, and they work to get especially like at-risk youth acquainted with fishing and the outdoors and whatnot. We're putting this on as a way for people to kind of rethink the river. We're going to have like a bunch of dope artists out there on the river, given their expressions, but we'll also have different speakers. We'll have people out there, like, we'll have Get Hooked teaching people how to fish. We'll have a storytelling booth for people to talk about their relationship with the Willamette and water, and kind of like think about why their relationship is the way that it is too, and art and all kind of stuff.
Sounds like a bunch of activities.
Matt, tell us a little bit about, you're a musician, and this is obviously an important cause for you too. So
yeah, I'm from St. John's, so when Donovan reached out to me about it, I was just like, yeah, no brainer, because I've heard the same things that you guys said. You know, it's a dirty river, don't eat out of there, don't swim out of there. I can't swim either, so I never even tried. But you know, like, I've spent a lot of time down there just going to Cathedral Park and everything like that, and just being up close, being on the docks and everything. So just for me to be able to go back home you know, a place I spent pretty much all my life, to go and raise awareness, you know, for a great cause that Donovan and everyone's putting on. So, you know, and I talk about St. John's and Portland a lot in my music, so it's only right to kind of come full circle to make this happen, you know.
That sounds wonderful. Mm-hmm.
So do you have you play your music online? Do you normally play around town?
Yeah. So MattRandall.com, that's MattRandoll.com. Yeah, I play locally, and I've gotten a chance to play out of town, places like Washington, D.C., Atlanta, Los Angeles, things like that. So always trying to expand, but, you know.
Is this your first event with the PHCC to work with them?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, me and Donovan have worked before. You know, he's has Gentrification Is Weird, which is another organization that he's a part of, and we're actually working on some things for St. John's for next year, trying to bring some awareness to some parks and things. I can't speak too early. It's a little early. That's a little sneak. Right. Yeah. But you know, it's something that I'm excited to do. You know, it's my first time working with them, so hopefully it's not the last.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have you talked about this cleanup and the Toxic Superfund in your music, or do you think?
No, but that's coming soon. I'm about to. You know, I'm definitely about to.
So, how can people connect with PHCC, and how can they find out about the Illamit Hip Hop Festival? You want to give the listeners some contact info?
Yeah, you can find more about Illamit in and of itself just by going to Facebook and typing in Illamit, a Hip Hop River Festival. I want to run down some of the performers that we have, because we've got Matt, we got Swiggle Mandela, who's also from North and Northeast. He's been in both places. Amenta Abioto, Talilo Marfil, West Coast Black Bear, Nicole Lachelle,
Jay Prodigy.
Yeah. She's 9 years old. She's so dope.
Oh, wow.
She's so dope.
Shout out Jay Prodigy. She's dope.
And she writes her own music, so don't play her. Jay Prodigy. And then Miss Wilma. Miss Wilma's going to do a poem for us, or a poem or two. So that, in addition to all the other stuff that I was telling you about, we're going to have a water ceremony out there that artist's going to lead as well. We'll have that. And then, if you want to know more about PHCC, OurFutureRiver.org is the way to find us. And then on social media, we're at Our Future River for everything.
So are you on Twitter? You're on Facebook, of course, Instagram?
Yeah, all that.
Excellent.
Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. And follow Get Hooked, too. Get Hooked Foundation, at Get Hooked Foundation. Because they're doing a lot of important work to get kids acclimated. We want this cleanup to happen, right, with the river. But then if people are afraid of water and of the fish, you know, that doesn't do us a lot of good.
So we want to build that love for the river and get people engaged. Well, it sounds amazing.
Yeah.
One last time, the Illamit Festival is on August 24th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's totally free. Just head on up to Cathedral
11
Park.
11 to 6.
11 to 6.
Yeah.
Ooh, nice
so
long
even
festival.
All day.
Yeah. All day.
Come enjoy.
So you have a lot of time to go check that out.
Yeah.
Sounds like it'll be great. Now, I have a question about that letter that you drafted to the EPA.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get a response?
The EPA, they came to our meeting before that letter went out. Just explaining some more of the background behind why they were saying what they were saying. And I'm trying to think in terms of a direct response. There's no official, like, rubber stamped response right now. So we do have some communication with the EPA, but in terms of the next moves that are most important for people to know is that you still have influence and that you can still write a letter that will influence whether we have a weekend cleanup or not. So you can still, it's send that letter to through Earth Justice to Governor Kate Brown and Richard Whitman over at DQ. That's really where the bulk of the power is. I mean, you can tweet too, but that's the bulk of the power.
Yeah. How much has politics influenced this decision now where they're talking about cutting money from that was already allocated to help this?
I mean, the Superfund program in and of itself is like, it's been gutted a lot, which like even people in the industry are kind of like joke about it like it's a Superfund, but not anymore because it's like there's no money in it. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, super broke.
It's a super broke site.
jokes. But yeah, there's not a whole lot of money there. So it affects everything. And now even with this particular cleanup, there's a lot of money that's being shouldered now by the people who actually polluted the river. And that makes the river even more political because it's lawyers hashing out in secret meetings, essentially who is responsible for what and how and for how much money that they have to spend. And it's the type of meetings that PHCC can't even be at. We're not at those meetings, you know, and we've had some progress, just like the city and the state came together. And they got $24 million earmarked now, 12 apiece, that they kind of have in a pot for some of the polluters to draw from to help do some of their cleanup. And then that basically acts as a credit so that it will lessen some of their cleanups too, like the city and the state particularly. So you have these baby steps that are happening right now, but at the end of the day it's still unfortunate because it's 13 years on paper, right, that the cleanup is supposed to be. That's not including the monitoring that's going to have to happen, so that's like probably about 30 years in total. So that means I'm going to have at least like 15 gray hairs by the time that cleanup is done.
Wow.
Yeah. And then your kid is going to be like a grown man.
30?
He's going to be your age.
34 years old.
It would be amazing if we could actually like see sooner results of these cleanups, you know?
Definitely.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about this, Donovan and Matt. It was really nice having
Thanks
you.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
And Donovan Smith, you're with the Portland Harbor Community Coalition. Matt Randall, you are a musician. You're taking part in a big music festival, the Willam Hip Hop River Festival. So thank you for joining us here on KBOO News In Depth.
Yeah, thank you again.
Thank you very much.